The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. It is your Hot Takes with your Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Chris Tolico, at Saved by Grace on Twitter X, here with Jeremy Schilling, at JTS Schill 20, and Doug Acheson?
Acheson.
Damn. Me and
he got so Doug. He got so mad at me when I mispronounced his last name one time. So give him hell, man.
Oh my god! Hey, I got the Doug.
You got the Doug.
And so that's going to be at D A I T C H I S O N 23. Michael Jordan, I'm assuming.
Got it.
I got that right. We'll take it. But we got a fun show. We've got some great takes here. We're just going to dive right in. So. I'll turn it over to you, Doug.
All right, yeah. The first one we're going to take is from Pete DeSilva, and he wrote into us, Marcelo Meyer will not play another game for the Red Sox. I like this take a lot. I think it's definitely – I don't know if it's more than likely, but I think it's definitely a possibility. I think a lot of it has to do with how the offseason plays out, if we're re-signing Bregman or not. If we do, and we have Bregman and Story on the in the infield, I think moving Marcelo is definitely a possibility and definitely a move I would want them to look at. If you can get a middle relief guy, if you can get a decent starter, and Marcelo has to be in the package, I wouldn't hesitate to put him in it.
What do you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, I totally disagree. He has zero value as far as I'm concerned right now. This is the Cassis issue we're also having. I think there's a misconception among baseball fans, and I'm been guilty of it. So it's not like it's a problem, but you don't have a player that's underperforming get hurt and then say, well, they see the other teams see this player the same way we see him, so take him. This guy and this guy for a starting pitcher. It's not how it's going to work. The game is too analytically driven. Back in, you know, and I'm older, but back in the 90s, 2000s, you could swing trades based off emotion. The way these front offices operate is based on analytics. They're going to know his injury history from the minors because we've talked about it on this podcast a number of times. He has it. So does Cassis. I lumped kind of the players in together here. And so it makes it, in my opinion, impossible to get what we would consider from the Boston management perspective, fair value. So how do you get fair value? You get the player healthy, you get him on the field. Now, I'm not saying he may never play another big league game. So if he shows out in spring training and you have a surplus at a spot and you can move him before the start of the season, fine. That's more of an NFL thing. So, but it could happen. But to me, he's going to have to go play a sample size of big league players, big league games, and you'd move them sometime next year if that's what you're thinking. And then that begs the question, is he performing so well that the value is better for us to retain the player? So I think he's going to play again for the Boston Red Sox. Unfortunately, I feel the same way about Cassis. And the other thing is, like Cassis, who was absolutely terrible before he got hurt, Meyer wasn't terrible, and he's a very good defensive player, and that's not going to change. He didn't produce offensively at a level that would overcome the injury, if I'm making sense. So he had the two home run game. He obviously flashed the glove, had a couple big hits. He wasn't an automatic out, but, you know, not raking to the point where we can overlook an injury.
Damn, Jeremy, you just sold me. I was about to follow up Doug and be like, I don't even know if this is a hot take. I don't think Mayer's ever going to play for the Red Sox, but it's a good and fair point for everything that you just said. I think, and I'm guilty of it too. I think sometimes we forget as fans, we forget how we value the player, the asset versus how everyone else is going to. And it's been so damn long since I saw this kid play that I forgot how much he was struggling, not necessarily defensively, but offensively. Yeah, I mean, I also don't think it's crazy to think that the Sox would not be able to pull off a trade, even if we wanted to trade him and get back the asset that we think we would. I think that if he comes back and plays well, depending on, to your point, Doug, what happens with Bregman, then it's a different conversation. If somehow we sign Bregman to an extension, he comes back, it's playing well, and he's just the one player that we have that's going to fetch us what we think we need to get to the next level, then I think there's some viability there as far as moving on and trading him at that point. But to this point, I was kind of going either way, but I think Jeremy, the lawyer that he is, just sold me on the fact. Mayor's staying, everyone. So is anyone
and
else?
By the way, you should want that as a Red Sox fan. Distressed assets, because that's what he is. That's the term. He's a distressed asset. So is Cassis. There is tremendous value, even if he's not part of your future, which I'm not saying he isn't, because I do believe he is. But so let's use Cassis. If you can get him healthy, get him rehabbed, and get him productive, you take the distressed out of the asset, and now you can have, you're still gonna have to probably pair them with other players, but the return you're gonna get back is better. So we all should be wanting the same thing. Either the player performs as a Red Sox, or the asset becomes valuable where you either pair him with other players to get a better haul back, fill a full need. Instead of a reliever, you're getting a starting pitcher. Everybody should be rooting for the same thing, in my opinion.
Definitely. If he comes back and he has a solid season next season, at the trade deadline, do you think they're looking to sign him to an extension or trade him like more?
Are you asking me first?
Yeah, either one.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I think he's part of the core. Thing that, so now I'm going to take Cassis out of the comparison. I'm going to put in Campbell. Campbell looked lost. Like, he looked like an infant trying to drive a car, in my opinion. So that's not what Mayer was. Mayer isn't like Roman Anthony calm at 21 years old, looks like a big league player for 2-3 years. Mayer was somewhere in between, but he's functional. He's not going to go out there and kill you. Campbell was essentially a positionless upside bat, and once the bat wasn't upside anymore, he just looked like a fish out of water. So the Campbell thing is a little bit different because Mayer's obviously more polished. I also don't think that Mayer is predicated on Bregman, because I think Mayer is still the long-term plan at shortstop. He's shown that he can play short and third. I'm sorry, second and third. So you could slot him in where you end up having a hole. So if Bregman stays, he could be playing second base for you next year. If Bregman goes, he could be your third baseman. Story could slow down in a year. You have the final year of your deal, and it's time to switch Mayer to short and put Story at third. He creates all sorts of roster flexibility, which if you listen to the episodes I'm on, I'm a huge fan of interchangeable parts, because I think you're less likely to have an injury devastate a season. So for those reasons, the answer is yes.
Damn, Jeremy sold me again. I'm just going to let Jeremy talk and I'm going to formulate my opinion. No,
the secret is, Chris, you're the host. You can let yourself go first. That's my opinion. Doesn't have any sway on you.
No, I mean, listen, you bring up really good points though, because I think very similar to Doug in a lot of cases when you bring up the point, but then the more you talk about like the viability, the fact that he could plug different holes, and I would agree with you. And I was going to say that I agree with the fact that we should all be hoping he comes back and does well, for the sheer fact that if we keep him, that's obviously better. If he is a tradable asset, we'll fetch more. I think that the rub here is the injury history, I think, is what probably scares people the most. And we also don't know how much it internally scares the organization to this point. I think the Tristan Casas, you know, knee exploding, you know, probably has the front office already reconsidering how they look at some of these things. And the fact that Mayer has had these nagging injuries, if you will, since the minor leagues, has to be cause for concern. So to answer your question, do I think they try to sign him to an extension? Yeah, it's possible. I think it also depends on, again, health, what they find. Like, if, I believe he had surgery today. We don't know what they found. I saw a nice picture of him with a thumbs up looking happy, but that doesn't necessarily tell me he's going to recover. So it remains to be seen.
I also think that if you're the Red Sox and you're running this thing like a business, like I talk about all the time, you're going to use the injury history to get a better deal.
Yeah.
I mean, look, at this point, Cassis should take anything. Nothing should be offered, by the way. I'm just taking a point. Like, Cassis has no leg to stand on. He has no production. He hasn't been on the field for a number of years. That's not a discussion. But getting back to Mayer, Breslow should, I know it's heartless and kind of like just the business side of it, but if he gets healthy and you like the way he looks in spring training, you should go to him and be like, look, we're going to come at you. This is it. This is the deal. It's 7 years. It's $50 million or whatever they set the value at. And you say, look, when you go back and talk with your agent, don't just listen to what he says. He wants to gamble because, you know, for obvious reasons. You have an injury history. It's something you need to consider. And I think you go, I think you need to go use that to lock up the player. And if he does have a history that extends into the future, it's not going to be a terrible contract, assuming he finds his way onto the field sporadically or not sporadically for the majority of the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think he was hoping at the beginning of the season that he'd be looking at a Roman-like extension. And now there's no chance if he wants something like that. So
there was no chance beforehand. Yeah. Let's get crazy. We can wish all we want, Doug.
Right.
The only way he was getting that extension is if he signed it like 3 years ago when he was still the number one prospect in the pipeline. But
or you come out and you hit 20 bombs in 120 games
and don't get hurt.
You're a legitimate 30-90 guy, then yeah, but that's not what he is. He's a plus defender. You know, he's going to hit for some power, but he's not going to be an all-star bat, I don't think.
Yeah.
I still can't believe you said he has no leg to stand on. Like, that was Cassis, a little cool.
Yeah, you caught on that, huh? That was unintended.
It's like, that's a Jaren Duran moment, Jeremy. Yeah. Right, any other thoughts on that hot take?
All right. No.
All right, good. All right, Jeremy, what do you got?
I got Johnny Fontaine, friend of the program. Writes for the Substack. Guys, if you're not reading Johnny's stuff and you listen to this podcast, I think you're missing out. His perspective is excellent. A couple articles ago, he wrote, I think, his best one. Follow the Substack and follow Johnny and the other guys that write for that, because it's really good content. He just wrote a kind of a historic piece on the rivalry that I think for especially some younger fans that maybe don't feel like it's a rivalry will go back to why some of us older people, Chris, I'm lumping you in here, find series like this kind of the highlight of the season. All right, so enough of kissing his ass. In the last three seasons under Alex Cora, the Red Sox have averaged 10 games under 500 after the All-Star break. Somehow Cora manages to wear out his players. They look like they're running on fumes. Guys, I disagree with this. I think Cora goes to great lengths to protect the players. I'll give you a very recent example. Isaiah Campbell has a 5-run lead and, you know, is pitching right-handed like he's a lefty. He can't get anybody out. And you got to get up Chapman. You got to get him loose. You got to get him in the game. And as it were, he only throws like 4 pitches, or I think it was 3. And one of them was a pitch clock violation. We have the game the next day, the crochet start. We have a spot for him to go in and win the game, close the game, and they don't use him because of the 4 pitches, because that would have technically been his 3rd game in a row. That, to me, if he put Chapman in the game, is a manager trying to win every night. That's not what Cora does, right? And I think part of it is because the analytics department, the nerds, are running the program over there. For example, we predetermined we're not going to tag up last night on a ball that he would have been safe by a mile because the throw wasn't any good. And I think also in part by the lack of moves at the deadline to support the big league roster and to not only create flexibility but depth so that you don't have to run guys into the ground. You should be managing their innings, both pitchers and position players, through the All-Star break. And then when you get to that point, now it becomes a sprint, which is where we're at. You should sprint. You should go. He can't do that when guys get hurt and there's no viable replacement on the big league club. So Meyer goes down. You're going to play Hamilton every day. Get out of here. Like, he's handicapped by the roster. Now, I'm used to be a big Cora guy. I'm like neutral on Cora right now. But to say that this is Cora's fault, I'm not saying it completely isn't his fault. I think he shares culpability. But we got to go back to the idea that for a second trade deadline in a row, Breslow effectively did nothing. Did absolutely nothing. And you go get Lowe from the Nationals, guy who's been on four different teams already this year. And sure, he hits a home run, but where's the impact pieces that actually are going to make a difference, that are going to be a part of the day-to-day game operation in the sprint portion of the season? To me, while Cora does have some culpability, it pales in comparison to the front office's failures to either spend money, and I'm talking to you, John Henry, and the liar, Sam Kennedy, and then buy Breslow, the puppet. There should have been 3-4 additions to two guys in the bullpen, a first baseman, a backup catcher, and I think this is a totally different landscape that we're sitting here in front of the Yankee series. Instead, it's the same team and these guys wearing down. You got to send Bernardino down to the minors to pitch four times in, what is it, 20 days? Just to give him rest? Like, what are we doing? So, Johnny, I don't like entirely disagree. I just want to bring in the context of the limitations that the front office placed through their puppet Breslow.
Before you go, Doug, I actually have a question based off of what you just said, Jeremy. So how much, especially like going into the Yankee series, right? Because I think, like, I live in New York, so I hear the rhetoric as far as how Yankees fans feel about Aaron Boone, right? And that he's basically just this puppet to the organization, front office, and the analytics nerds, right? Like, and that's taking over baseball, but it's kind of pertinent here. Are you suggesting that, like, how much do you think Alex Cora has a say, if any,
in the decisions that Breslow's making?
No, just even like in the day to day, like as far as like in a game, like even like let's take the Nate Eaton situation, right? Yeah. Like, how much of that does he get to say, like, oh, you know what, like, I'm going to send Nate Eaton versus, well, oh, we've scattered that arm, no one's running on him.
Yeah, I'm going to lose my mind if the front office is getting to write into any portion of the lineup card. That should be Cora every day. That should be, he's on the plane, he's in the clubhouse, he's there before the players, he's there after the players, he's talking to players, he's managing personalities. If some nerd in the front office is influencing the card, then I would just blow up on this thing. That would infuriate me beyond belief. The fact that the decision not to tag Eaton was made before the game, to me, is just an indictment on the organization, top down. Top down. Like, Cora wants to be paid. He can't just... So Johnny agrees with me here. It can't just be Cora out there on an island. He's not going to keep his job if he doesn't listen to the systems being put in place by the organization. So for me, this is and I've been saying this the whole season, in the off season, this is an organizational, in this particular instance, overvaluation of the analytics. Like, guys, it's a one run game. We've already had the bases loaded twice and stranded. That's when you take the risk. I was listening to 98.5 today for a very short period of time. There's some analysis that went on. I don't remember all the numbers, but essentially it was a 43% chance that a 265-foot fly ball to dead center results in a likelihood of a run scored at 43%. So it's less than half, right? But Bregman's hitting 290. So he's got a 29% chance to get a base hit. Chris, I'm going to answer your question with a question. What's the better odds? 43% the tag is successful, or that Bregman gets the hit? I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. Touch and feel adds into that. You know, having an understanding of where they are in the game, the failures offensively that have been plaguing this team for about a week. Like, to me, it's top down. Cora has to, on some level, be complicit, or he's not going to coach this team.
Yeah, and Jeremy, I actually heard it was like maybe the next segment before with on 98.5 that they were talking about how the managers don't set the lineups basically across the league, and that they were saying that it all comes from front office basically across the league. Managers aren't setting lineups anymore, and I think that is bananas.
So if somebody's setting the lineup that's not on the bus, on the plane, in the
clubhouse. I mean, it's hard to like say for sure, you know, but that is what. So, you know, Felger's like tapped into Milwaukee Sports, and he said that someone close to the Brewers told him that there's a guy, like a manager, assistant to the general manager or something, that makes the lineup every day. And it's just all analytics.
That makes me hate baseball.
So I know. Like it drives me crazy.
You're telling me Jonah Hill is setting the lineup.
Yeah, right, right.
Oh, not God. Jonah Hill, the guy he portrays, obviously.
Right. And I don't believe I don't believe, you know, everything I hear on 98.5. You take it with a grain, but you know, they have, you know, they're not always wrong either. So it's stuff like that is really what drives me crazy. I really couldn't understand how a manager doesn't have the power to set a line. I mean, that
blows my mind. If that's real, that really blows my mind.
It does.
Then that means that the value that the head coaches or the managers, their salaries are going to plummet. Because they're not managing based on anything that has to do with the game in front of them. It's all about what the numbers crunch up to say to do. At which case you could put some guy with a pocket protector in the dugout and just have him punch the computer. It makes me hate baseball. It's going the wrong way. It's way too analytical. This isn't what this is about. I'm going to stop. But the analytics drive me nuts.
I agree. I mean,
essentially, you could have someone just hold an iPad. I know Terry's going to go bananas when I say the word iPad now, but someone could hold an iPad and just the decisions just come in and they just go by what comes on the iPad. What's blowing my mind is the amount of numbers that Jeremy just threw out. He went from like a few good men lawyer to now all of a sudden he's a beautiful mind in the same podcast. So kudos to you, Jeremy. But
I was having trouble keeping it all together for being.
Yeah, honest. It was wild. You were like, when you said you were going to throw a question at me, I was like, I'm not prepared to answer. Like, those
numbers. All right. I'll reconsider next time.
But to the point that was made on the take, I don't know. I mean, with Cora, like I get frustrated with Cora too. I think he definitely has some sort of level of influence in decision-making. At least I'd like to think. Because to both your guys' points, if he doesn't, that is just absolutely ridiculous at this point for the whole sport or the Red Sox, although I wouldn't be shocked if it was just a Red Sox issue. Nonetheless, I share some of the sentiments of Johnny where I do get frustrated with the decision-making, which I do think falls under Cora and his levels of responsibilities as the manager. But do I think he's 100% culpable in this? Probably not. I do think there's a heavy level of influence from the pocket protectors, the people that hold the iPads in the front office, whatever you want to say. But I mean, at the end of the day, he is our manager. And the reality is the last couple of years, we have not finished with a record that has been desirable for this organization. I think there's been instances where I feel like he's had more talent than the record shows. He definitely strikes me as a manager that does better with a veteran team and more talent. I mean, that's probably most managers, and doesn't necessarily thrive with young players. But I'm also not going to throw all the blame at him. It's probably a healthy mix. Any other thoughts?
Yeah. No.
Okay. All right. So my hot take is from Hard Express at Uncle Rob X on Twitter X. The Yankees absolutely suck and will not win another World Series for another decade. I thought this was a good one considering we're going into a Yankee series. And I think it's absolutely absurd. As much as I would love for that to be the case, especially since I live here in New York and I get abused by Yankees fans all year round. And the fact that the Sox have absolutely sucked for five of the last six seasons. Listen, say what you want about the Yankees. I mean, they were, look at it this way. Let's just look at this season. Forget about their history. They were in full Titanic mode for almost 2.5 months. We should be 10 games ahead of them right now. If things look the way they are when the last time I checked their score, we will be 2 games behind them. When last weekend, I think that we were like 3.5 games above. So in 1 week, they've made up almost 5 games when you take that into account. So, and that's in the middle of, again, a Titanic effort by the Yankees the last 2 months. Listen, say what you want. Every year they're in it. They're competitive. They make the playoffs. They were in the World Series last year. I wish we could suck as bad as the Yankees have the last decade. do I think they're going to win a World Series in the next decade? I hope not. But if I was a betting man, you told me who's going to win one, the Sox or the Yankees right now first. Much I hate to say it, I would bet on the Yankees, because even though both are definitely not what they once were, specifically in the Red Sox, but even the Yankees, they don't outspend everybody. They are looking at pennies. They're looking at dollars and cents. The Yankees fans complain they're different than the way we do as Sox fans. I think their level of frustration is probably even greater in some cases, because their expectation is to go to the World Series and win it every year. I can't honestly say that that's been our expectation as Sox fans for the majority of our lives. I hope they don't win one. I'll just leave it there. But I think the take is absolutely ridiculous.
I love this take, and I'm totally agreeing with it. I see them as just a competing team, and they made it last year, but I don't think many people had faith that they would beat the Dodgers. It's a down AL. With the way our team, the youth we have, I think the next 5 years, we're in a better position than they are. And as much as we complain about Cora, I'll take Cora over Aaron Boone every single game of the season. I think he's just awful. I don't see how he still has his job. But I love seeing him out there, because I don't think that he has what it takes to bring the Yankees to a World Series. And Cashman, has done a lot, obviously, but he's on the hot seat too, I would think.
Jeremy, before you say anything, let me ask you a question, Doug. Honestly,
yeah.
Which front office do you trust more to try and get their team to the World Series for the next 2 to 3 years? Remove the players.
I guess you'd have to say the Yankees. But sometimes I feel like that's more just, is it the front office or is it just they're the Yankees?
That's a fair point. No. But I think even when removing that factor, I don't have much confidence right now in the Red Sox front office.
No,
I don't think anyone should. And there's not much from a Yankees fan perspective in the Yankees front office, but just from a results standpoint, the proof's in the pudding, they have gotten closer than we have. So that's why I give them the edge. And here's why I think we can't dismiss it. The AL is down. Someone has to win it. And when you're looking at the two of us and we're agreeing they're more aggressive and being well-positioned to get there, they got there last year. So anyone can make it. And I think my biggest fear, because I would agree with you, if you're looking at it like the best team in the NL is going to come out, yeah, I don't think they're going to win. But you get a year where like Diamondbacks happen to somehow make it on a miracle run. Yankees could beat a Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
If they would have made it a couple years ago, they would have beat the Diamondbacks. And that's the fear I have and why I don't dismiss it completely outright. But I do agree, if everything falls the way it should, best teams make it, I don't think they're winning one this decade either. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I mean, the Yankees are trying to win and the Red Sox aren't. I mean, they'll do what it takes. Do you think the Red Sox would have ever signed Aaron Judge to that contract? If your answer is yes, you're not paying attention. That they are never going to go get the top and pay the top talented players. They want to build a balanced roster. They want to have a mix of veterans and this and that. The teams that win the World Series in this era go out and typically have the largest payroll, make the most moves, supplement the roster, and that's not what the Red Sox are going to do. So I agree with Chris on this. I think if I had to put money on what franchise is going to win the World Series next, I think it's the Yankees, and I don't think anything that we've seen in the preceding 5 years would lead a reasonable person to believe it's the Red Sox. Now, look, I hope I'm wrong. I hope John Henry's purse strings have been tight while he's waiting for the young guys to emerge, but here they are, and we had a deadline to go show that we can supplement the roster and compete, and they did absolutely nothing. So we have a GM that has no experience, has fumbled / completely bottomed out in two of his opportunities at the deadline. And yes, he's made some positive strides with getting Crochet and convincing Bregman to come here. But, that Bregman contract's a problem. It's created nothing but a series of one-year deals. You don't know if he's going to be here or not. I don't know, man. I the Yankees are more committed to winning from just an organizational top-down perspective. I don't think it comes down to things like the managers anymore. What team is going to spend? What team is going to do what it takes at the deadline? I mean, you can say what you want about Cashman. He's navigated 25 deadlines.
To Johnny's point.
I mean, so I just don't see it. I just don't. And Breslow's not going anywhere. So I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. I think the Yankees, if either team wins, it'll be the Yankees first.
The next 5 years, would you rather have Crochet or Judge?
Wow. How old is Judge again?
He's going to be 30.
He's like 32.
42. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's around there.
I mean, I'll take Crochet solely based on age.
Yeah.
I think if their age were the same, I would take Judge.
If their age was the same, it's not even close.
Yeah,
he plays every day.
And I also – I think the contract comes into it. The reason why Crochet was the player targeted was where he was at with his arbitration years, and they knew they were going to get some sort of deal. They're never going to re-sign Crochet. He could win 6 Cy Youngs in the next 8 years. He's not going to come here for whatever the inflation says it's going to be, $400 or $500 million. Like, we have Crochet for the period of time, minus probably 1 year, because they'll trade him in his last year if he's healthy for an asset, because they don't want him to go for nothing. But I'll take Crochet, but the contract, there's stuff to talk about there about the contracts. I won't get into it.
Yeah, I would agree with George. I think you got to take the everyday player. And to be fair, with the production you get from Judge, he's on a reasonable deal, comparatively speaking, for the going rate and market. To your point, though, Doug, where I do agree with you is I'm more excited, obviously, for the core of the Red Sox going forward than the Yankees. As far as the young core, I think where it gets tricky, though, in that, and again, we're a little too close to it because we're Red Sox fans, is we go, man, I'm definitely more excited about Mayer, Anthony, Campbell, and all these guys versus what the Yankees have. But what the Yankees do have, and what I do have confidence, they will build a structure and core around whatever young players. Without Bregman, because I don't think he's re-signing, we don't have much of a core and that leadership core that's really that next level of talent to surround these kids. You're starting to look back to now like the Jaron Durans. And I mean, he's a leader in the sense that he's been here for a bit. Core seems to love him and his attitude, what he brings. But like, is he a real leader? Is he as talented? Does he have the winning and the experience that of a Bregman? No.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, great. Great points for sure.
Let's go. I know this gentleman, Jeremy Schilling. How many true aces are in the big leagues?
Not many.
Well, so I'm getting chirped in the comments about I'll take the everyday player from George and Johnny because they affect the game every day. My response to that is that's great for the regular season. Guys, I don't – like the expectation in Boston should be the playoffs. So I'm not going to argue your point from a regular season perspective, but – you have a true ace. Like, there's probably what, 6, 7 in the bigs right now? Like, a true shutdown, like, here it comes, there's nothing you can do about a guy. Those are the guys that win a series. You know, you win your 3 starts, 1, 4, and 7, and you find one other way to win a game, and your ace can steal a series. Like, this isn't about regular season wins and making the playoffs. That's not how I view what my expectation is from the Red Sox. They should be World Series contenders. And you need a true ace to go and win a World Series. And I can talk about the effect in the regular season, too. We've talked about it a lot. A stopper, you know, a leader for the rest of the rotation. All those things matter. Where would we be without Crochet? We would not be holding a playoff spot.
Yeah, no,
I'm not saying that there's like my argument's correct or not. I'm just explaining a little bit more detail based on the comments. Like, ask yourself that question again, Johnny and George, but talk about the likelihood of winning a World Series. I think you might reconsider the Judge Crochet decision.
Yeah, I completely agree. The playoffs is a whole different animal when you're talking about which one you would take, because The ace is so important in when it comes to, especially in the ALDS, you know, when it's a five-game series. You can get that first game, it's that's everything.
Yeah, you know, I think if you're talking about playoffs, it's not even debatable. Pitching means so much. I mean, it's all about pitching once you get to the playoffs. We say it about every team. We haven't been there in a while, so we don't really remember what that's like. But I think that's also part of the argument that a lot of Sox fans have, right? Is we're so far removed from consistency and actually just being in the playoffs that it's like, well, of course I'd take Judge because I just want to get to the playoffs. And I know if I have Judge, I'm going to make the playoffs. It's an automatic playoff appearance. But to your point, and I understand, Jeremy, that once you're there, we already know the Judge isn't going to carry you through them. Be interesting to see what he does without Soto carrying him. So this is an interesting question from Johnny. If you could trade Judge for Crochet straight up, removing the money, would you do it?
No.
No, probably not.
I would
guys,
say
where's this rotation without Crochet? What are we even considering? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Chris.
Yeah, but we'd hit 9 home runs a night, Jeremy. Duh.
Yeah, we'd have to though, because we'd be letting up 8 runs a night.
Yeah, you're not kidding. No, it's a fair question. I think from the age standpoint, because that's the one thing is you can't change. Forget about the money. If they were the same age, yeah, I'd do it. But the age gap, even removing the money, I don't think I do. But it's a fair question.
Any I just think you see like every World Series run we have, you have to have the ace.
I feel like every World Series team, you have to have the ace, unless you're the Dodgers.
Yeah, for sure. You just have to, and it's hard to find. It's very hard to find. I think, you know, you can see like in 18, you know, Stephen Pierce comes out of nowhere and just hit and just mashes all playoffs. You know, and he outplays Aaron Judge. You know, you're not going to – I don't think you're going to get, like, a random pitcher to just be an ace.
No, that 100% not. And I think the other point, and I think this is where the people that are adamant, like, you know, Johnny just had a comment, like, the Sox have no power. It's not just Johnny. It's many Red Sox fans, especially the ones that are still, like, holding on to the fact that we traded Devers and we haven't replaced him and et cetera. Are like, we haven't replaced that bat and we have no true power in this lineup. And I know I joke about it all the time. I call Roman Anthony the singles merchant at this point because, and I know that's unfair. And Jeremy's going to be like, we got to wait till the offseason. He's got to bulk up. And I agree with you. It's just there was so much talk about this kid in the minors. And then even when he came up, like, man, the sound of the ball off that bat, God, he's going to hit so many home runs. And listen, I'll take a single off of. Out of anyone on this team right now in comparison to what I'm seeing. It's a lot of strikeouts and a lot of not even putting the ball in play. But it's a fair concern from Red Sox fans that we don't have that power bat in the lineup consistently for the foreseeable future until either Roman Anthony bulks up and puts that part of his game together, or there's someone that we haven't considered, whether that's the password who's still in the system, or off-season maneuvers, whether it's a trade. We're spending money, which I don't see us doing.
I mean, you could go get an impact bat at first base in the offseason if you were dead set on it. It's going to take money. Suarez, I think, is a free agent. So I just think it's easier. I think there's more impact bats than there are impact arms, true aces. So
I agree, Johnny.
I have no comment on that. I just think it's easier to find an impact bat than it is to find a true ace. I think teams with true aces, you know, especially with controllable years, it's impossible. You have to go get Skeens. You have to go get an impact arm from a team that is never going to spend money. The Rays, like it's just easier to get impact bats. So Johnny and I are going to have to agree to disagree on his. Take with on Crochet versus Judge.
All right, agree to disagree. I can accept that. Any other thoughts, comments?
None.
All right, well, that's been your hot takes with us, Bastards at Boston Baseball. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, X, Facebook, Instagram. I will mention that you know, myself and Doug also write for bastards@bostonbaseball.com, aka Substack. But thank you for stopping by. And
that was a shot. That was a shot.
A little bit.
Well, not a little bit. That was a shot.
You gave, I mean, Johnny, I mean, you gave a nice massage and rub. I mean, you got two guys on here that are writing for the website.
I said, and everyone else that writes for the Substack. Jesus, the ego on you, right, Chris. Here.
Anyways, go Sox. Thanks for stopping by.
Go Sox.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.